Hey, welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison on this beautiful day, Sunday on August 3rd. We're pleased to have Dr. Sarah Olberg with us today. Dr. Olberg is a retired minister, college professor, and a fifth generation humanist. Welcome.
Well, it's good to be back here. I remember when we first started meeting and talking about you starting a group here, and I, against my principles but not my better judgment, suggested that you affiliate with the AHA rather than the UUA. It's a good thing you did. One of the things that Robert asked me to talk about today was the relationship or the status of humanism in the UUA. I can do that very quickly. It's non-existent. A couple of things have happened. It's been sort of moribund for several years. David Schaefer became president, filling out somebody's term of almost 4 years, and then was elected to his own term of 4 years, and then said, oh, because my first 4 years was filling out Stephen Jonas's term, I can run for another 4 years. So he's virtually been the president for almost 12 years. David is a wonderful, wonderful person. I loved him dearly, but he tends to get very distracted, and too many things in too many pots. You see his writings here and there, and he responds to practically everything on the Humanist chat line. The Humanist Institute chat line particularly, and he just never goes through and gets things done. And we've had a terrible problem with the mailing list, because the UU Humanist used to have their own secretary, and she kept track of all of that. And then she went to grad school and moved to Arizona, and they turned it over to the AHA to do it, and the AHA did not do it well. And so we lost our continuity of who was a member and who wasn't. And it was, you know, signing people up at General Assemblies was really about the only time there was any activity. And that was when the annual meeting was. And the rest of the year, there were supposed to be 3 journals per year and 4 newsletters. And if you're members of the UU Humanist, you know that if you've gotten a journal in the last 2 years, and the newsletter, it was a miracle. So it's been very sad, but so that's one element, that the leadership just didn't follow through. Roger Bruin goes to every GA, he twists arms, he gets new members every year, he tries to put out the journal, but he doesn't get the cooperation, he doesn't get the follow through. And so it's sad. After probably 8 years of taking over, David Schaefer took over the whole thing from the AHA and was trying to do it with volunteer help in New Haven. We still don't have it. And it's partly the problem is that David is one of these people that doesn't understand that sometimes you have to go with the imperfect rather than the perfect, or nothing happens.
And, idealist?
Yeah. Well, he has this idea that we should, you know, have this sophisticated mailing list, which is far more sophisticated than it needs to be, so we can check on people a zillion different ways and everything, and it's never gotten set up. Roger Bruin would say, you know, for 5 years at General Assembly, I've been collecting 3x5 cards on everybody. We could get a graduate student or a high school student to organize those cards and come up with a mailing list, which is far better than the one that you're operating from on the computer. But David won't do that because that's not what he wants to do. So anyway, it's pretty much falling apart there. Then the frosting on the cake, or whatever, how you look at it, was that you may be aware that the UUA had a number of affiliate organizations, of which the Humanists were one of the longer term ones. But over the years, they had let in a lot of organizations which are really kind of kinky. You know, they had the Psi Symposium, and they had the Wiccan something or another, and I can't even remember all of them. And the latest one, the one that really was the camel that broke the whatever, was the polyandry group. And suddenly the UUA looked at all of this, you know, list of affiliate organizations and said, oh my goodness, anybody that looks at our list of affiliate organizations will think we're a bunch of kooks. So we need to get rid of them. Well, how to get rid of them? And so what they did was to virtually get rid of all of them. And there were only three that remained, and they were ones that existed for a reason of diversity. I think the African American or Minority Ministers Association, or I mean, things like that. And everybody else got wiped off, and they have to reapply with much stricter regulations. Well, of course, David, being our leader, has not gotten around to reapply, and I'm not sure they even could make a good case at this point. When it was first in the works and they were talking about this, and they interviewed, the UUA interviewed every organization, affiliate organization, we went in and talked to them, and they're not particularly humanist friendly, but we thought a very good case because we were such a long-term member and had had such a marvelous history. But it became apparent that they were not looking at us real friendly, not so much because of what we were, had been, but because of the humans. So there was some discussion about whether we should join with other groups that were equally in jeopardy. For instance, the Jewish group, the even possibly the pagan group. You know, if we joined together with them, would we then be large enough and strong enough that we could maintain an affiliation? And there were some of us who felt that that was kind of not, I don't know quite how to say it, but it would not allow us to continue to be who we really were.
Would it dilute the purpose?
It would not only dilute the purpose, it would confuse people. And so we opted not to do that, and as it turned out, it wouldn't have made any difference anyway. So we are currently, the Humanists still on paper exist. I'm told that a journal or a newsletter or something came out in the last month. I didn't receive it, neither did a number of other people who are on the chat line. But we are no longer affiliated with the UUA. And I'm not even sure we should be. I wrote David and said, you know, maybe this is a good thing because we have a lot of internal problems, and maybe this is a time when it should die. And if it needs to be revived, it'll be revived by somebody else in some other way and maybe be more viable. So that's the story of the Humanists in the UUA. Any questions about that?
I this is fascinating to me because I'm newer to the UUs and newer to understanding the structure of organization of humanism. So when you say a lot of internal problems, do you mean other than what you've already mentioned as far as being organized and trying to get a list of people? I'm just kind of curious on what the challenges are, because I feel like Unitarianism, the way I understand it, and humanism, do go hand in hand.
Used to.
And there should be a humanist group and that's officially part of the UUA.
There should be. There absolutely should be. But there should also be other groups that got axed too. It wasn't just us.
Right.
We shouldn't take it too personal. The UUA has made a number of decisions in recent years that I find problematic, and that was one. But in terms of internal problems of the humanists, part of the problem has been that for years, decades, it has been virtually a one-man show. Before David Schaefer, it was Corinne Erhesian. Before Corinne, it was somebody else, you know, who was the president, and never really made use of the board, although there was one elected every year. Never made use of the other officers, although they were elected every year. And just, you know, when it got to be time for the programs for the General Assembly, they'd contact some people and get a program together, and, you know, and then we'd have an annual meeting at General Assembly where we'd elect a new board, which never functioned. That's one of the main things. It has to get out of this idea that one person should be the titular leader. Another problem, aside from the mailing list and all of that, is that when Corinne Erhesian was the head, he was not only the president, he was also the editor of the magazine. Now, he did a good job as that. The magazine was wonderful for a long time. But when he retired from both. Well, no, he retired first. He couldn't run anymore as president of the bylaws, but he continued to do the journal for a couple of years, and then he quit doing that. And I suggested Roger, and I think Roger has done a pretty good job given the restraints. But he's not a Corinne Erhesian. And then we lost this secretary who for years, I mean, I say she went to graduate school, but she was in her 50s. For years had kept things together and answered letters in the office and kept the organization going. And when she left and we turned it over to the AHA, who didn't care less, except they wanted the money, and they put a lot of money. And then, you know, we had financial problems. One of the ironies is that just before the UUA cut us loose, we got a bequest, a rather large bequest, from somebody that nobody ever heard of. So now we have something like $130,000 and no way to spend it. So, you know, and for years we were operating broke. So, I don't know. I think that the main problem is that it has never been much more than a mail organization. You know, I mean, people would join to get the journals and the newsletters, and that was really all there was. There was great talk and hopes, and David Schaefer, you know, said we need to have chapters in every UU church and so on and so forth, and it just hasn't happened. It hasn't happened for a variety of reasons in different churches, but it seems like we're talking about faith-based organizations. There is such a crying need for humanists to get organized. And maybe, this is another reason why I think maybe it's not bad that the UUA cut us loose, because then I see more groups that were trying to have local active groups becoming affiliated with the AHA. And the AHA now has a lobbying voice on the Hill, very active one, Lori Lipman. She now has assistants. They are making a difference in the Congress. And that's something that, you know, the UUA could never, the humanists in the UUA could never really, because we were just never together. So when I suggested that this group affiliated with the AHA, I was seeing this happening. It hadn't happened yet, but I saw the handwriting on the wall. And I hope that you are in good contact with the AHA and are paying attention to the lobbying that they're doing and supporting it and talking about issues and so forth.
Could you comment on this philosophically, the humanist piece of Unitarian Universalism, where you see it now? Maybe in your your service this morning, I maybe read into it, but I think the fact that you're seeing Midwestern UU as having a humanist threat.
No.
As I see UU in my 25 years of involvement, is that they're definitely a humanist influence, but it tends to wax and wane. And my impression now is waning, and I'm wondering how you see the reasons for that. Is that the humanist, maybe one of the reasons.
Well,
I'll let you respond. I don't shoot my mouth off here.
Well, my sermon this morning was more historical. Mm-hmm. Humanism really started in the Midwest, in the Unitarian churches in the Midwest. And it has always been and still is strongest here, insofar as it exists. But there has, in recent years, been a definite movement toward more almost Christianity. I mean, the UUA has put a lot of money into trying to start some specifically Christian Unitarian churches. They're into this megachurch thing now, which penalizes small fellowships that tended to be very humanist. Especially in the plains, you know, where there aren't large groups of people, would get together. And I was telling somebody that I found it ironic that the very year that the UUA gave its social service award to the Unitarian Fellowship of Bismarck, North Dakota, which has 45 members, but has made such a difference in the politics of the state of North Dakota. Just amazing. And that's what they got the award for. That was the same year that the UUA decided that in order for a group to form and become affiliated with the UUA, they could do it with 25 members, now they have to have 50, which would have rendered Bismarck ineligible. You know, that kind of short thinking has had a big effect on humanism, because humanism was most alive in the small fellowships. And Bill Sinkford, the president of the UUA, used to be a humanist. His family had some kind of a tragedy, and he saw the light.
Didn't walk into it.
But at the same time, and I find this interesting, I wish somebody would really look into this, because I haven't paid much time. I supported Bill when he was running. I've been kind of sorry because of what has happened. We had conversations with him about his view of humanism, and I thought he was going to be very supportive of humanism, but it hasn't turned out that way. But part of his thinking, and I wish somebody would compare this with Obama, because Obama started out as an atheist, at least a secularist, and he found that his life needed the support of the black church. And I think that's partly Bill Sinkford's thinking, too. And it goes together with the want for diversity in the UUA and the hope that we can attract more minority people. And he feels that in order to do that, we have to be more Christian.
I heard that Martin Luther King had the same struggle.
Yes, he did. And it's a struggle that I can well understand.
Was he Unitarian?
No, when he was studying to be a minister, he was toying with what denomination to go with. He was flirting with the UU.
And then,
as Sarah said, politically and strategically, he, and being a black man at the top, he said, well, I gotta go to the theistic group, because that's why I'm going to be respected by my peer group and get more people involved in the movement.
That's where the people work. So it's a dilemma. But anyway, if that's enough of that, I want to share with you a couple of conferences that I've attended.
Can I ask first, what
is happening with organizing in online environments as far as mail lists, Yahoo groups, or any of the online journaling kind of places? Are people taking advantage of that as a means of organizing?
Yes, they are. The trouble is there are way too many of them. You know, the humanists just can't seem to get together. They can fuss over the tiniest little things, and so they have a different line for this and a different line for that. You know. I have given up on the Hugh Humanist one. I'm still on it, and I think there may be 3 postings a month, unless some issue comes up that somebody. But then it's about 3 people that are discussing that issue. So that one is not. The AHA one is very busy, but not, again, a wide variety of participants. The better ones are not affiliated with a particularly humanist organization. The Brights have a great, ongoing, if you want to get into fascinating discussions. I'll talk a little bit about one of these conferences. There are some very innovative kinds of things going on that are being done by students.
Except that last one.
Being done by students.
What was the site?
Innovative, creative, exciting use of the internet.
Oh, I thought you said something.
You said something Brights.
The Brights? Oh, you don't know about the Brights?
No, I thought you said something after the Brights.
Okay. I don't know about the Brights.
Well, I don't know about them either, but they have an active internet presence, is all I'm saying.
I believe that was Richard Dawkins' term for what he would prefer to call the humanist atheist sort of thread.
Right.
That term hasn't gone very well in the humanist community, but that's kind of where it came from, I believe.
I'm just giving that as an example of one that works. Last April, I went to a program that you probably didn't even know was happening called The New Humanism. And it was to celebrate 30 years of humanist chaplaincy at Harvard University. Now, I didn't even know that there was a humanist chaplain at Harvard University. And I don't think anybody else did either, but it seems that there was a student at Harvard 30 years ago who was unhappy with the fact that the university itself did not have counseling and support group for students. They relied upon the religious organizations to provide that. And he was an atheist, humanist, and he wasn't comfortable with going to religious organizations for that, and so he went to the powers that be at Harvard and said, we need a humanist chaplain here to serve the purposes of secular students. And they agreed. And he served for 30 years, and he retired last year, and they appointed a new one.
What was his name?
His name was, Tom Ferrick. That's his picture. The new one that they appointed was Greg Epstein. He was a protege of Sherwin Wine, Jewish background, from the organization. Do you know who Sherwin Wine is? Oh dear. Sherwin Wine is probably one of the best speakers you would ever have the opportunity to hear. Just fantastic humanist. He started the humanistic the Jewish humanists. And he had a very large temple in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and was one of the founders of the Humanist Institute, And then also started a humanist Jewish rabbinical training school. And there are now several humanistic Jewish temples in the country. And Sherwin was just, I mean, he was an SOB in some ways, but he was a fantastic man in other ways. And anyway, Greg was one of his proteges and trained as a... there's a wonderful book that, well, Sherwin wrote many books, but one that I used a lot is called Judaism Beyond God. And he talks about, he reinterprets all of the Jewish holidays and rituals and so forth in humanistic terms. And you can translate that into UU terms too. And use it so. So Greg Epstein became the new chaplain. And he's only about 30 years old, and single-handedly he put together this conference. And he invited everybody. He invited the atheists, the secularists, the students, the UU, the religious humanists, the other kinds of humanists, you know. And it's the only conference I have ever been at where there was absolutely no bickering about whether it's appropriate to be a religious humanist or you have to be a and all of this kind of stuff. I mean, everybody came together, and the way it was organized, and it was so wonderful, such a wonderful experience, that everybody got along just fine, and they talked about how they could work together. My goodness, that never happens in humanism. So I came away from that on a real high. Now let me tell you about some of the things that happened. The speaker the first night was Salman Rushdie. And he gave a wonderful talk about, he said he came to humanism through the readings of reading P.G. Wodehouse. And Spinoza was fun too. His philosopher was Spinoza. And he said he was fortunate to have been raised in a home without God. His parents were non-believers, except his mother got just a little religion in her later years. He said he thought of it as a kind of like getting arthritis. It hurt just as much. the proper study of mankind is man, and for literature and novelists, human has to be at the center. Otherwise, it's not literature, but it's something else. So it's natural for a novelist to be a humanist. Well, at that first thing, which was held ironically, and Rushdie made a big comment about this, in the Memorial Chapel at Harvard, which is full of religious symbols. And there was a Turkish musician, blind musician, who did wonderful Turkish music. And all. It was a real high. And there were 1,100 people at this conference. About 300 of them were students, college students. Okay? All right. Then the next day, we had... they gave an award to Ambassador Loeb in support of religious pluralism in the United States, and he gave a speech, and one to Tu Weiming for outstanding achievement in humanism, and one to Dar Williams, who is a woman composer who does wonderful things. And then Tom Ferrick, the old chaplain, gave a speech. The theme of the thing was international humanism. And Rushdie talked again the next day. Tu Weiming talked about... They had a panel on Torah and Abrahamic humanism. And Salman Rushdie was on the panel, and he talked about humanistic Islam. And it was really interesting. He said that Islam did not need to be religious, and it hadn't been religious until quite recently. It was basically a human-oriented, secular religion. And that was the way he was raised in it, and why he was so shocked that he got into so much trouble with the fatwa and everything. Sherwin Wine talked about humanistic Judaism. Sherwin was at his peak. He's now retired. He was now retired. Sherwin Wine was killed in an automobile accident the week after this conference. It was very sad. And William Murray from Unitarian Universalist, he was the low light of the whole conference. Then they had the future of organized humanism, and Laurie Brown from the Secular Coalition, and Fred Edwards from the AHA, and Peter Dirks from the University for Humanistics in the Netherlands, and Derek Arajo from the Center for Inquiry, which is Paul Kurtz's organization. They awarded... Okay, Salman Rushdie talked about humanistic Islam. And Amartya Sen, do you know who he is? I didn't either. He's the UN. He's kind of the person at the UN that looks after secular issues and tries to keep things together on a non-religious way. He talked about... Anyway, there was somebody who talked about Confucian humanism, Islamic humanism, Amartya Sen is a university professor emeritus at Yale and Harvard, and he won the Nobel Prize in Economics, and he spoke on Indian humanism. And all of them, and then Sherman talking about Jewish humanism, they all said that our interpretations of these religions are so wrong because of the way our press presents them and the way things have happened in very recent times. But all of these religions are really basically humanistic religions in the way that they're organized and used to be practiced. So it was fascinating. And then the woman who's the AHA lobbyist talked. And then one of the most fascinating things was a panel of students, and I was hoping there would be some students here today. And there were three of them. Each had a MyFace or MySpace or what, you know, something like that. One was MySpace and one was something else and one was something else.
Right.
On the internet, and they each had at least 10,000 friends on a humanist internet thing. And they were using this unique internet thing as a way to organize people all over the world as a humanist group that had lively discussions and talked about what needed to be done in the world and so on. And there were two women and one man, and the man had, I think, about 70,000 people on his list. And they talked about how they had started it and kinds of things. I mean, it was just amazing, the creativity that they had put into this that us stodgy old humanists have just never thought of doing. So it was a real uplifting kind of thing. And then I went home, and wouldn't you know, after it was all over, then the old humanists, got to talking on the website. And they decided that Greg Epstein's idea of a big humanist tent that included everybody would never work because the secular humanists would never be able to get along with the religious humanists. And
these are people who went to the conference.
Not all of them, but some of them. Yeah.
But the old school.
The old school.
Established.
The old established school had to... it says, in the blogosphere where the atheist community is very active, some people aligned with him and others said the danger is in this ridiculous star status that and trying to Epstein is the destructive force. His heresy is that he has an obligation to be embracing. So that.
And this is a bad.
Well, this article says that, in other words, Epstein isn't wrong, he's right. The name brand atheists aren't friendly, at least not in print. but maybe being friendly isn't their job, that's his. But the way the conference was put together, and I have more stuff on this if you're interested. There was the Humanist Network News had an article, Harvard Conference brings 1,000 plus new humanists together, and talks about what happened, and it was real exciting. Then just a couple months ago, June this year, I went to the International Humanist Ethical Union Conference in Washington, D.C. It was held by the Secular Student Alliance and the International Youth Conference and the International Humanist and Ethical Organization. And each of those has an active youth component. And the youth, again, were very present. And very. This is the most hopeful thing that I've seen. This conference was not nearly as well organized and not nearly as interesting. As a matter of fact, it was mostly giving awards to people, and then there would be a period, you know, a session of some workshops, all of which were pretty mediocre. They did have some humanist films that were kind of interesting. The Myth of Human Rights at the United Nations was interesting. But mostly, it was when they gave awards to people. Paul Kurtz gave a very good talk on the present, past, present, and future of humanism. That those people that they gave awards to gave speeches then, I guess. And that was the high point of the whole thing. And some of the people that got war awards were Congressman Stark, Pete Stark. And he was wonderful in his humanist presentation. And I mean, it says here that he made history by becoming the first member of Congress to ever publicly acknowledge the lack of a belief in God. I'm not sure that's accurate, but he's certainly the only one currently. And he really laid it out. He said, you know, I don't know how you can be a politician and not be a humanist.
Yeah. Or a doctor not be a humanist, or a lawyer not be a humanist.
Well, and then they gave awards to Judge John Jones. He was the judge in the Pennsylvania Dover School case. And he said he didn't know he was a humanist until during the trial. And the more he heard from the creationist people, the more he realized. So now he calls himself a humanist.
Maybe they should give an award to the creationists for creating.
Eleanor Smeal got the AHA Humanist Heroine Award. She was president of the Feminist Majority Foundation and publisher of Ms. Magazine, and is now president of the National Organization for Women. And she really gave a wonderful talk about the role of women, women's rights or human rights. And, well, so on. Anyway, it was Carolyn Porcum. Have you ever heard of her? She got the big one. She's a planetary scientist and leader of the imaging science team for the space mission to Saturn and director of the Cassini Imaging Central Laboratory for Operations. She got the Isaac Asimov Science Award. She first rose to prominence as a planetary scientist on the Voyager. And if you ever wondered why there's such a close relationship between science and humanism, she was the living example of that. She was just fantastic. So those speeches were good. The rest of the conference was bad. There was another award that was given to Matthew LeClaire. Have you heard about him? If you were on the internet, if you were on the Hugh Humanist thing or the Humanist Institute one, you would have heard about it. Because his father is a lawyer in New Jersey, and his father was on both of those, and he was touting Matthew. Matthew was the most amazing high school student. He had a teacher who was spouting all kinds of ridiculous stuff, like, you know, if you didn't believe in God, you'd go to hell and stuff, in the classroom. So he started recording it, and then he complained. And they didn't believe him, and the teacher denied it, so he played the recordings, and which at that time was legal. It's not now. They stopped it because of what he did. But and the school did not back down and supported the teacher and not Matthew. And he got all kinds of hate stuff, as you can imagine, and took it to the state Supreme Court and won.
Now, what state was that?
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
But he is so articulate, and now he's got a new thing. He was a senior now, and this happened when he was a junior, the beginning of it. They got a textbook which he said is full of inaccuracies, and so he's trying to get them to either change or at least correct the inaccuracies in the textbook and so forth. And he's getting nowhere with that, so that's his new thing. You know, that'll be going up the court thing too. Just an amazing kid. What really got me, I went to his workshop. He gave a wonderful speech after he got the award, and then I went to his workshop afterwards, and he was talking more about this and all the details and what had happened and the kinds of things that problems that he'd run into in trying to make his case. And there was a woman there from the Netherlands, and she was just appalled. And she said, "Well, why didn't you go to the this and why didn't you go to the that? And doesn't the so-and-so support you? And, you know, how could this happen?" And the Americans there in the audience, it was about half and half, foreigners and Americans, and the Americans are saying, "You don't understand." And the foreigners were saying, "No, we don't understand. How could this possibly happen in a country like this?" You know. And this woman from Holland ended the whole thing by saying, "I feel when I come to America like I have gone back to the Dark Ages."
She has.
Wow.
So that's my report.
Well, that's interesting. If you have information more specific on those young people's names or MySpace and Facebook, because I'd like to pass them on to my own daughters, but I think one of the troubling things for me is the shift within UUA or away from humanism is it's really difficult for young people to hear about humanism and to become a part of it because I mean, Prairie is unusual in that we have a humanist group that happens to meet here in the same building, and so we're open to the announcements and everything so they know about it. And we have people that are humanists have met with the high school group and with our REAP program explaining, our thoughts and all. But I'm concerned that many young people are being raised under the umbrella of being you, but really are not understanding or being presented with information on what humanism is. It would be really nice if we could find some way to link our e-systems and young people in with those dynamic young people you mentioned.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying the 70,000 and
I want to go to that conference at Harvard.
I have a Facebook and MySpace.
I don't think there'll ever be another one like it. I don't know. Maybe I'm being pessimistic.
It was so great that you'd think that ever. Did other people feel?
Oh, yeah. People just came out of there floating. Unlike any other humanist conference you've ever gone to. But I don't know this Greg Epstein. I think he's going to be a mover in the humanist movement if he doesn't get knocked down. But people are out to knock him down. He's too inclusive. He's too soft. He's too religious.
How can humanists be too inclusive? Isn't that kind of a...
You know, we're inclusive of everybody except humanists who don't think exactly like we do.
It's hard. Yeah. A humanist can be too inclusive.
I don't know. Let me read you. You got your pencil out? If you want to know.
Christine's going to write it.
Okay. All it says about this wonderful panel of the young people is, he meant Meta, author. H-E-M-A-N-T. Never heard of that name. M-E-H-T-A. He's the author of I Sold My Soul on eBay. Random House, 2007.
Okay, I can find
it. Did he do that? Because someone did that. Did he actually
maybe
put his soul up?
I don't know.
He may be the one.
He may be the one. Okay. Rebecca Watson.
He got quite a bit for it.
Who is the editor of Skep Chick magazine.
What's the first word?
Skep. S-K-E-P. Skep Chick magazine.
Okay, great.
August Brunsman, who is the executive director of the Secular Student Alliance. Amanda Shapiro, the president of the Harvard Secular Society, and other top young humanist leaders from across the United States.
Well, you can go into Facebook or MySpace and put their name and you can request to become a friend.
Yeah, or maybe just go on the Yahoo or the internet.
Maybe just request, can I be your friend? And once they let me be your friend, then you can do it.
You don't have to pay to be a friend.
No, you don't.
You just put a pick on their name and you say...
I'm not sure whether they have an age limit or what. I don't know.
No, I'm on both of them. MySpace.
Well, anyway.
You have to pay, though, to be a member of MySpace?
No.
They're both free. All you have to do is set up a password. But that's really exciting because I see it even more so in the age in which... kids graduate from high school and they go off to college and they really, it's difficult for them to maintain a UU connection at all, and certainly not a humanist connection. You know, there are, if they're lucky, their college is in a community where there's a UU group. But even that, like my younger daughter, the UU group, the local UU group, it's a community of 10,000 and they have a UU group that meets on her campus in the student center, but it's all adults. There's usually 15 or 20 people there, and most of them are older adults. And she has gone to some things, but
Well, and that's the way all the humanist conferences are. You know, they're getting older and older and grayer, so it's really great to see young people coming in and being very active and very.
It's interesting what the trigger was for them to.
I think for a lot of them it was Greg Epstein. They have a very big student group at Harvard. There's only one other college in the country that has a humanist chaplain, and that's the University of Michigan. Or Michigan, maybe Michigan State, I forget. And that's a woman, and she was there too. But she was kind of blown away by what was happening at Harvard too. So there's just no idea. She's just kind of a counselor and all. She doesn't have an active student group that's doing all kinds of things.
That's interesting. A question for a kind of general question. What do you do to support the humanist
movement?
Boy, that's a good question.
It's so fragmented. Yeah. It seems like, you've kind of validated that through some of your topics today, but Lori Levin-Brown came and spoke at the Humanist Union last year, and I really do think they're doing wonderful things in Washington, but some of the people they have on their board I don't feel are good representatives of humanism. And I don't want to be one of those divisively what I believe.
Like who?
Well, like Christopher Hitchens. I feel like he's very divisive. He's very, and they welcomed him to their board. And I thought, that's bad, from my perspective. So, I was a little bit upset when that happened. I struggle to find a connection with humanism that I feel like, this is
beyond just rights.
Yeah.
This is exactly, you put your thing on the, let me read you this. At the center of the controversy is humanist chaplain, 30-year-old secular rabbi, Greg Epstein. In March, he called the popular writers Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins atheist fundamentalists. He accused the best-selling authors, now including Christopher Hitchens among them, of being more interested in polemics, in tearing down and waging war on religion, than in doing anything positive.
Well, they are. He did, but he hit the nail on the head.
But that's what he's getting attacked for, saying that.
Well, and then, the whole brights thing. So, if you don't call yourself bright, you must be dim. It's just really insulting.
Yeah, man.
He said his responsibility is to speak out for the positive aspects of disbelief. My problem with the atheists, he told Newsweek, is not that they're saying God doesn't exist. What I'm saying is we've got to build something. So, I agree with you. On the other hand, including people like Hitchens and Harris and so forth on your board gives you some credibility and some money and some publicity, and all of that can be positive if you don't use it the wrong way.
A lot of nonprofit organizations have people on the, not necessarily nonprofit, but boards are often diverse from your particular point of view. I don't think that to be on a board means that you believe.
Nor does it mean
that the organization believes what you believe just because you're on the board.
Nor does a person being on the board necessarily mean that they have any active role. Sometimes it's just for the name.
Right.
But in answer to your original question about which organization to support, I think I'd still go with the AHA, particularly since they have become more organized and the lobbying thing is very important, although there are now other people involved with that. I guess my second choice, and I can't believe I'm saying this in a way, because I've had so many differences with Paul Kurtz over the years, but Paul Kurtz in his old age has kind of mellowed. And he has started a political action organization, political social action organization, the name of which I can't recall right now. But they seem to be, their sole thing is to try and make a difference from a humanist viewpoint in politics and in social structures. So, I send some money there too, but secular, something, I can't remember, anyway. Other than that, they're just too fragmented. The atheists don't do anything except complain. The adult secular people are kind of negative. I think the Student Secular Alliance is much more positive, but I think that's just the young people are much more active and positive. I wouldn't get to the UUs anymore. I do, but I wouldn't if I were not an old
crony.
Yeah, whatever.
Crony.
So.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much.